Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post is a frequent presence on these airwaves, discussing the news of the week with David Brooks each Friday on All Things Considered. His latest book, Why the Right Went Wrong, is now out in paperback. We were lucky enough to catch up with him on Friday when he did his NPR spot here in our studios in Albany. Welcome back to The Roundtable.
Great to be here and great to be back in Albany. As you know, I lived here many, many years ago, and it was great to be back here.
What was the big story in town when you were covering Albany?
I covered Albany in the UCARE years, and so it was really the aftermath of the New York City fiscal crisis and the problems that that created for the state. The state was sort of coming out of it and in pretty good shape by the time I arrived here in 1978. And then going into 82, of course, was the governor's race, and covering the Mario Cuomo-Lou Lehrman race is still one of the most fun pieces of political reporting I've ever had to do, because it was a very exciting race where you had two people of very clear views having a very civilized debate over quite fundamental issues. So I very much enjoyed that. And then I headed off after 82, so I never got to cover Mario Cuomo as governor.
It sounds in your answer like you're longing for a debate about issues again.
It would be nice to have a substantive debate. What's odd is beneath this Clinton-Trump sort of choice is a very large debate about a lot of issues, ranging from immigration, the economy, to tax cuts, to how do you help lift up the parts of the country that have fallen, you know, still haven't recovered economically. For the most part, we're not having that debate, of course. I think we get at it indirectly through the debate that's been started over, how right-wing is Donald Trump, the speech that Hillary Clinton gave about the alt-right, as it's known. So there are issues embedded in that. But we're not having a big solutions kind of debate. You'd like to hope that would come out when the candidates face each other in the fall in what will certainly be very interesting encounters.
Are you hopeful that it will?
Some of that will be up to the candidates. I have a feeling Clinton would like to talk about proposals more than Donald Trump would, although it would behoove him to put some on the table. And a lot will depend on what strategies each of them pursues and what how the questions go. I mean, there'll be a lot of responsibilities on the moderators of this debate. There always are, but I think it'll be an unusually big responsibility this year, because you could imagine either candidate, and probably especially Trump, trying to take the debate off in a direction that might not be as amenable to detailed discussion of any issue.
You know, here at the station, we hear a lot from our many times left of center listeners who blame the media for the rise of Donald Trump start to finish. As a member of that class, do you give any credence to that?
Actually, I have some real sympathy for those listeners. I don't think National Public Radio did it. I don't think, for the most part, the newspapers did it. But I think television media gave Trump extraordinary coverage, way beyond what they gave anyone else. I saw one study in the middle of the primaries where, if you looked at the share of the electorate each candidate was getting, Bernie Sanders actually had a bigger share of the voters, but the coverage of Trump was something on the order of 80-1. And that there was a bigger study done which showed that Trump got more than twice the share that Hillary Clinton got, and way more than any of his Republican opponents or Bernie Sanders got. So I think the coverage was outsized. I think there was a chase after ratings. And so I do think after this campaign, there will be a reckoning. I hope there is. I think the media really has to ask itself a lot of questions, because Trump came along at a particularly weak moment, I think, in the media, particularly cable television. They were desperate for ratings, and Trump provided ratings.
Let's talk about the Democratic nominee, our former New York U.S. Senator Hillary Clinton, who's not really had a great week with a lot of the revelations about the Clinton Foundation and access to the State Department. How trenchant do you think this issue is?
I think it has some staying power. First of all, it was a problem from the point of view of the Clinton campaign, simply because it finally changed the subject after 3 weeks of really horrible news about Donald Trump, almost all of it brought upon himself, beginning with his, I think you have to call it an attack on the Kahn family, on a Gold Star family, and a whole series of other things he said. I think that, you know, when you look at the news about the Clinton Foundation, there's been no real quid pro quo taken at most. It's emails for meetings, some of which probably would have happened anyway. My own view is that they should find a way to completely insulate her from the foundation. I've had this idea that I've been peddling that if she wins for the duration of a Clinton presidency, they should rename it the Eisenhower-Kennedy Foundation after two popular presidents of their youth, Bill and Hillary Clinton. Let other people run it for that period, you know, stay away, and then they can come back when she is out of office. But I think that it invites too many questions, even if there is no smoking gun there. They just don't need these questions, and we don't need to be distracted by them.
So there's about 70 days or so before the election. A lot of the websites and experts who rank the probabilities say that right now she's running away with it. Is that how you see things?
I think it's very hard to see how Donald Trump wins. I joke that unless you repealed women's suffrage and the Voting Rights Act, it's very hard to see how Donald Trump wins because he's running so far behind among women and even farther behind among Latinos, African Americans, and it looks like Asian Americans as well. And you just can't assemble a majority in Trump's case with such terrible numbers in those groups. Now, if the Libertarian candidate and the Green candidate, Gary Johnson and Jill Stein, rose to a certain level and started sort of taking votes away from Clinton, you know, the Green vote is mostly out of her. And I think the later votes to Johnson as he goes up are out of her. Then maybe he could make a run of it. I just don't see how he can win a majority. And she is obviously contesting Republican states, and he is not contesting strongly in very many Democratic states at all. I mean, he should be ahead in Pennsylvania, for example, if he's going to win this election, and he's been well behind there. He should have a shot at Michigan. He's been behind there. And unless you can begin to break up that blue wall, as my colleague Ron Brownstein called it, a Republican can't win. And it you know, he was claiming he could do it with blue collar votes. But even if it's not even clear he's doing that well with blue collar voters compared to Mitt Romney. But he's running way behind Romney among college educated whites, you know, where Romney was. And that's a real problem for him. So it's very hard, barring some radical change, to see how he pulls this off unless the Trump vote gets badly splintered as the campaign goes forward.
A book put together by your newspaper, The Washington Post, and a team of editors and reporters this week looked at Donald Trump's life and history and business. And I wonder what you think of how important those issues, which normally we vet everything in the life of a candidate from birth on, will be where a candidate like Trump is just so unusual to this process.
Well, you know, a lot of people say that Trump is impervious to this criticism, mm-hmm. that it doesn't affect him. And I think that misreads the situation because Trump would not have these catastrophically low approval ratings if people weren't paying attention to stories like this. And, you know, the Post, I think, did a great thing here. I mean, I'm biased. I'm a Post loyalist, but I was proud of the Post for doing this. I had nothing to do with this, so I'm praising my colleagues, where they invested a lot of time and serious you know, investigation, just basic reporting to tell us things about Donald Trump that we might not have known or to give us real detail and background on things we thought we knew. So I think it is, you know, the Clintons have been under scrutiny, it seems like, for centuries. I mean, and to have Trump get a thorough vetting of this sort, I think is really useful. And I do think it makes a difference to voters.
Last question. This week in Albany, the son of Billy Graham held a, I guess you would call it a rally, at the shadow of the Capitol. And you, in a recent column, argued that the U.S. Suffers from a real lack of inspirational thought leadership from members in the church. And I just wonder if you could bring us up to speed on that.
Right. I mean, I actually think there are a lot of inspiring religious leaders in the country. We don't pay them the same amount of attention because we have so politicized religion. And we kind of assume, I think this is especially true among secular people, that religion lives only on the right end of politics. You know, and let's start by remembering people like Martin Luther King. I talked in the piece about how we pay so little attention to what's happening in the African-American church, which has been a powerful witness throughout our history. And there have been a lot of social justice leaders in, you know, in Christianity, in Judaism, and now in Islam. And so I think that what we need, as I said, and they're hard to find, are humble prophets. I talked about a wonderful religious intellectual called Kathleen Cavaney, who wrote a book called Prophecy Without Contempt, which is a wonderful idea all by itself. And she suggested that, you know, prophets set themselves up in judgment of a society, and that is their role, but that they are most effective and most moral when they have personal humility, acknowledging their own sinfulness and failure, social humility, not lifting up their own groups, and spiritual humility, not pretending that they know what God's judgment is going to be, which means not assigning your political opponents to hell. And there's an awful lot of that going around, and it makes me, I think a lot of people, you know, believers as well as non-believers, very uneasy.
Well, it'll be an interesting race to the finish on this election, and I very much look forward to hearing you on these airwaves each Friday about 4 o'clock, and of course, reading your work and E.J. Dionne's latest book, Why the Right Went Wrong, is now out in paperback. It's great to have you back in Albany.
Such a joy to be here. Thank you so much.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.